Okay, good evening. Tonight we are going to have the second shiur on Muktza. The first shiur that we gave outlined the reasons for the Isser of Muktza, what point Isser Muktza set in originally, and the different categories of Muktza, right? We mentioned that according to some, there are 50 categories of Muktza, there are 7 categories of Muktza. We went through 4 categories last week. The basic categories of Keli Shemachar Isser, which is if I have a utensil whose primary purpose is to do something that's forbidden on Shabbos, so that Keli can only be moved, Letzarch Gufo Mekom, I can only move it if I need it for a permitted purpose. That's the hammer for the proverbial coconut, or Letzarch Mekomo, or if I need it because the hammer is in the place where it is interfering with stuff, so then I can move the hammer. We also spoke about Keli Shemachar Heter, which is a strange category of Muktza, that even utensils which are primarily used for permitted purposes on Shabbos should not be moved for no reason. We spoke about Muktza Machmas Chisra and Kis, which are items that can easily be damaged, which is a severe form of Muktza, but nevertheless is still a Keli, it still is a utensil. And then we spoke about Muktza Machmas Gufo, which are items that really don't fall into any category. They're neither kelim, they're not utensils, and they're not food, and they're not svarim. So they are just forbidden to move on Shabbos, racks, etc. Money, right, that was the Hashgafa point, that money also is basically in this category. Tonight I'd like to discuss with you moving Muktza in a permitted way. That's the topic that we'll talk about tonight. We know that a Keli Shemachar Isser can be moved, for example, at Tzorach Gufo and at Tzorach Mekomo, right? That if I need my hammer to crack the coconut, it's fine, or if the hammer is in the place where it's interfering with other things, then I can move it. We also mentioned the possibility, I think last week, that moving the hammer can be permitted because sometimes it's considered graf shorei, no? Remember, we have this category that things which are really disgusting, things that are mos, and people are repulsed by them, so you are allowed to move it on Shabbos because it's considered kavod habrios, no? We know that Yisurim Derabanan are all, I shouldn't say all, but many Yisurim Derabanan are relaxed in the presence of kavod habrios. Right? The Gemara in Brachos speaks about how certain types of tumas kohanim, a kohen can't become tummy to dead bodies. Certain circumstances, it's only a din d'rabbanan. So a kohen is allowed to become tummy for tumah d'rabbanan if it interferes with kavod habrios. And there are other dinim as well. Now for kavod habrios, for human dignity, we relax rabbinic prohibitions. So an interesting application of this is, in fact, in categories of muktza, no? If a person, for example, doesn't have toilet paper, to be quite blunt, right? And there would be a kavod habrios issue involved in that situation. So then we'll relax the prohibition of muktza, no?
To do what?
And you can take regular paper or something, right, which would ordinarily be some sort of muktza, and use it because, right, we relax prohibitions that are d'rabbanan for kavod habrios. Another example, yeah?
Does that include if you forgot or you ran out of pre-torn paper?
Yeah, so if you ran out of pre-torn toilet paper also, you can relax Yisurim Drabanon for the sake of Kavod Habrios. You have to know what's in this Drabanon. To rip toilet paper, is that Doraisa Drabanon? To rip it on the perforations could perhaps be a Doraisa. So it's better to use paper that would ordinarily be Muktza. That would solve the problem. Certainly, we relax the Isser D'Rabbanon of Muktza for Kavod Habrios. So another example of this, which my mother would be very fond of, is the concept of Graf Shorei, which is items that are considered to be disgusting. Disgusting items. So we are allowed to move those because it's considered a Kavod Habrios issue. If you look at the last source, now I always do this, by the way. I put the source sheets together in the wrong order, and then I start backwards. Why I do this, I don't know. But the last source on the sheet begins as follows. Kol davar metunaf, any disgusting item, kigon, Re'i kiv tzoa. I'd prefer not translating everything. Bein shel adam, bein shel tarnegolem. Whether it's human or it is from tarnegolem, from chickens, ukiyotze behem. Im hayu b'chatzer, she yoshvim ba. If it is in a courtyard that people are sitting, mutar lahotziyam la'ashba lebeit hakisei, afila b'lo kli. You're allowed to take them to the garbage or to the restroom even without a kli. In other words, it's a disgusting item. It is in the chatzer, it's in the place that I'm using on Shabbos. So that is considered a violation of my kavod habrios. That's the way that Achronim explain this. Because it's here, it's interfering, it's right in front of me. So I'm allowed to move it, I take it out on Shabbos, because the Isser Derabbanan of Mukta is relaxed in the face of kavod habrios. Right? So that's commonly known as the halacha of graf shorei. Graf shorei is literally a bedpan. Right? Not only is the excrement considered to be disgusting, the bedpan is also considered to be disgusting. And if it's in a place that you're using in the house, if it's in your bedroom, your living room, some room that people are using, it interferes with your kavod habrios, so then we relax the prohibition and we move it on Shabbos. No questions asked. Now,
this may be a simple question, but when you say move it,
So to go outside my house if there's no air, if I can't.
Right.
But inside my house, I could take it, throw it out in the garbage or something, remove it from the premises because it's a disgusting item, it interferes with my kavod habrios. Other examples that fall into this category, the Achronim say, are dead mice, no?
Yeah.
Rebbe Yoshev extends it even to live mice.
Okay,
big fetish. That a live mouse is also disgusting. I'll tell a story about this in a second. Yeah.
If it's a kavod habrios, should I be able to take it outside even if there's no air room, as long as it's not a
shushar? So the thing is that not every single Isser Derabbanan is relaxed for kavod habrios. There's a difference between an Isser Derabbanan that's an Isser per se and a gezeira. Certainly, Surim Drabbanon, which are there as a precautionary measure that shouldn't come to violate an Isser D'Oraisa, are more chomor. So carrying, even outside, when there's no air, which should only be a Drabbanon in most circumstances, but it's a precautionary measure that shouldn't come to carrying the Rishas Arabim, so it's more severe, it's more chomor. Fine. So you have to be... So dead mice are certainly a graf sharei, it's disgusting. Live mice... also, we assume are disgusting. So I remember one time, I live in Washington Heights, I don't know. Mice are known to happen in people's apartments in Washington Heights. Some of us actually name all of the mice that come into our apartment. Others are don't have this wonderful practice. But
they all look the same.
They all look the same.
More or less.
So I remember one time, there was a mouse. That I wake up early Shabbos morning and there is a mouse I found on the trap Shabbos morning and it was like doing its thing, it was still alive, so I'm thinking, am I allowed to move the mouse or not? So I decided, okay, you know, it's a disgusting thing, my wife sees it, so we'll get rid of the mouse, I go to move the mouse. So it was the middle of the winter and I'm thinking, well, where can I move this mouse to? So I thought, well, the best thing would be I'm going to move the mouse and leave it outside in the cold. Right? So then I realized that that's probably an Isser D'Oraisa. That you can't do, no? Because the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that you could be chayiv for murder if you are kafto b'chama or kafto b'tzina. If I take a person and I tie the person up and the hot blazing sun is there already and then the hot blazing sun kills the person, so that is murder. Instead of using a gun to kill the person, I am using the hot blazing sun to kill the person. Or kafto b'tzina, if I tie a person up and I leave the person out in the cold, right? So that is also, I'm using the cold as a weapon to kill the person. I am chayiv misa. This one will put me to death for doing that. So with the mouse also, killing a mouse on Shabbos is an Isser D'Oraisa of Netilas Neshama of killing. And this mouse can't go anywhere once it's on the trap. So if I leave the mouse outside in the cold, so the mouse is going to be killed. Right? And that would be kafto b'tzina. So then that would be potentially an Isser D'Oraisa. So you have to be careful. So where can you move the mouse in the place?
What about...
It's a malacha she'ena tzricha legufa. Okay, that's probably true, but malacha she'ena tzricha legufa, we give all the chumras of full-fledged D'Oraisas generally. Right? Yeah.
Isn't there something about cruelty to animals here? I mean, it's bad and we want.
Right, so cruelty to animals.
I mean, you catch it on that glue trap or something, or it gets its tail caught. Poor little thing. I don't want to suffer. I just want to go away.
Yeah, that's true, but I'm still not allowed to kill it on Shabbos. Now, yeah, cruelty to animals is a terrible thing. I happen that my sympathy to animals extends to most animals. Mice is already a different category in my mind.
They're mammals.
But, so what do you do with this mouse? So you have to find a place to put it where it won't interfere with your kavod habrios. Right? So you can move it to a different room, a room that no one will go into. That you could do, but you can't really put it outside in a place that the elements will kill it. You could put it outside if it's a nice spring day and the mouse would live in that temperature. But if it's a cold winter day, you can't.
Normally, the mouse trap you expect it to kill the mouse. So you're allowed to kill the mouse.
No.
At some point.
I'm not allowed to kill the mouse on Shabbos. The mouse trap I set up before Shabbos. The mouse happens, but the mouse doesn't keep Shabbos. So it ran into the mouse trap on Shabbos. So these are the halachos of graf shalrei. So one big kula for moving muktzahs if it interferes with my kavod habrios. Now the later achronim, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and others comment that interfering with your kavod habrios doesn't only apply to things which I would say for 98% of humanity are considered disgusting, like the bedpan and like the mouse, but let's say there are nutshells, right? You eat nuts on Shabbos. So the nut is mutter, but the shell on the outside is really going to be muktzah, no? Because the shell is kind of useless. So you have this pile of nutshells. If you leave a pile of nutshells on your dining room table, I know my mother would probably kill me for doing something like this, right? I mean, she would say it's disgusting.
But not on
Shabbos. Well, not on Shabbos. Especially if there are guests who come over. It's really, so that could be an offensive type of thing. So the Achronim say that also might be considered a graf shorei. Rav Shlomo Zalman then writes, well, maybe in certain circumstances we could say having a hammer on the table. We spoke about how I can't move the hammer unless I need the hammer to crack open a coconut, or unless I need the place where the hammer is. Unless I don't need the place where the hammer is, but there are guests who are coming over, and it looks really disgusting to have the hammer and nails out on the Shabbos table, so maybe you could say that's also graf shorei. That's something that Reb Shlomo Zalman's expression is, that all graf shorei is in the imbut. It's something that's not nice. If it's not na'im, if it's not nice, and that offends people, so then it would be permitted to move the muktzah. That is also going to be a heter for moving muktzah on Shabbos. Because we're working backwards on the sheets, let's go to the next two sources moving backwards. There's another kula of moving muktzah on Shabbos. I have to tell you that I use this one all the time. Especially now I have a little baby at home. She's like 16 months old. And the issue is that babies pick stuff up and they tend to put it in their mouth. And there could be things which are choking hazards. It's a serious issue. I don't think this one even has to be said over necessarily. We should all figure out that this is perfectly mutter. But it is permitted to move muktzah if there is potential hezek, no? If people get injured. Now, the interesting thing over here is that there seems to be a bit of a contradiction in Shulchan Aruch. And the Prima Gadim asks this question. In Zimin Shinches If Vav, right, the Ramah comments, in Nishbaru B'makom Sheicholim Lahazik, this is talking about whether broken utensils are considered muktzah or whether broken utensils are not considered muktzah. So let's say glass breaks, and the glass could damage Kigon, Zechuches Shenishbara Al HaShulchan. Let's say glass breaks on the table. So the Ramah says, oh, B'makom Sheicholim, it breaks in a place that people walk. I can move the broken shards of glass. Even though broken shards of glass are technically muktzah, right? But I can move it so that you don't get injured. Pretty obvious. But then later on, only a few seifim later in Shulchan Aruch, it says, Kotz hamunach b'rishus harabim. Let's say I have a thorn in a public place. So it's mutar l'taltel pachot pachot midal ramos. Remember, in rishus harabim, in a public thoroughfare, I'm not allowed to carry on Shabbos. That's an issur de oraisa, to carry 4 amos in a rishus harabim on Shabbos. If I carry less than 4 amos, I take, let's say, 6 feet, and then I stop. The Achronim say I should sit down also. Stop, sit down. Then go another 6 feet. Stop and sit down. So that's what I should do. If there's a thorn in Rishus HaRabim, Mutar L'Taltalo, Pachos Pachos Midalad Amos. In the Carmelis, I'm allowed to move it openly. Why? Mishum D'Chayshinon Shema Yuzku Bo Rabim. Ubamokom Hezeka D'Rabim Lo Gaza Rabbanon Shavos. There's no Isser D'Rabbanon because it's Hezek D'Rabim. A lot of people be injured. So the Prima Gadim asks a question. He says, 1 second. The previous case is not a case of rabbin, no? The previous case is just some broken glass on the table. That's not a public area. It's my private table at home. I can move it. Because the Isser D'Rabbanan doesn't apply to Mokum Hezek, even for an individual's damage. Yet, over here by the thorn, it says that it's only because it's Hezek D'Rabbim. It's only because a lot of people might get injured. So this is the contradiction that is asked. Are you allowed to move Muktza if only one person will get injured? So there are two different English language Hilchos Muktza books that take different approaches to answering this question. Let me tell you first what Rabbi Bodner has in his book. Rabbi Bodner quotes the Prima Gadim's answer to the Prima Gadim's question, which is probably a good way to go about doing it. You look at the fellow asked the kash and you try to see the teretz he gives. So the Prima Gadim basically answers. There are two different isurim, right? That in Sif Vav we're talking about just an isur of Muktza. In Sif Yud Ches we're talking about an isur of carrying. Carrying is more severe. For carrying, it has to be Hezek of Rabbim. But for Muktza, if any individual get injured, potentially, so then you can move Muktza. That's what the Prima Gadim says. For some reason, Rabbi Bodner and Rabbi Cohen, in his English language Hilchos Muktza book, I don't think we have it here. I don't think we have it. But in the other English book on Muktzah, he wants to say as follows. First, he wants to suggest that maybe the case is that even in Se'if Vav, when we talk about the glass breaking, that's also a rabbim, because there are three people around. And the Gemara says, in the context of Lashon Hara and in other contexts, that whenever there are three people around, that's considered rabbim. Okay, cheap answer. Then he says, and it seems to me, he says that if you have one person around, but that one person is a kid, so he quotes from some achronim that one kid is also considered like a rabbim. And therefore it's going to be permitted to move glass if you have a kid at home. You don't have a kid at home, if you're only one or two people in the apartment, he assumes you can't move broken glass. I think this is dead wrong. I think the halacha is that you're allowed to move broken glass even if there's only one person around. I think we should pass him like the Prima Gadim's answer to the question. I see absolutely no reason to give another answer to this question. For the Isser of Muktzah is a lower level Isser, and you could move Muktzah if even one person will be damaged. I think that is obvious. I move Muktzah all the time on Shabbos. Again, even the question of Rabbi Cohen, I could, because I have a baby. But even if I wouldn't have a baby, whenever glass breaks, and Rabbi Cohen says, if glass breaks in your house, if you could close the door so that no one gets into the room, so do that. I think you're allowed to move it. If there's any concern of Hezek, you can move it. It's not a problem whatsoever. I don't understand what he wrote. Yeah. Let's move to, I guess, the first side of the page. Talk about other cases of moving Muktza Beheter. Remember, Keli Shem Lachto Le'Isser, my hammer, I can only move it if I need the hammer to open the coconut, or if I need the hammer's location, where the hammer is. It's Tzarech Gufo, not Tzarech Mekomo. Shulchan Aruch writes as follows. Let's pick up from the top. He speaks about Keli Shem Lachto Le'Isser, that I can move it, etc., Tzarech Gufo, not Tzarech Mekomo. Good. And he gives examples. Karadom lachtoch bo develo. In the second line, I have a knife and a saw that I use to cut the pressed figs. Right? I'm allowed to move it. Bein l'tzarech makomo. If I need shetzarech l'shtar shemakom shakeli munach sham. If I need to use the place where the keli is, I can move it. Fine. And then he quotes the din that we all are familiar with. This was my favorite halach as a kid. Right? And I'll tell you why in a second. Mutzilo litzol masham l'hanicho be'izo makom sheyirtzeh. Right? That once you move the muktzah, I pick up my hammer because I need the place where the hammer is. The hammer is over here and I need to eat over here. I pick the hammer up. So then, once I'm holding the hammer, I could put it down wherever I want. No? I'm allowed to take the hammer, move it to the regular drawer where the hammer goes, put it back. That's the halacha. Like, once it's in your hand, you can move it anywhere. This idea comes from a Tosfos at the beginning of Beitza and Daf Gimel Amud Beis. Tosfos develops this idea. It is pretty much unanimously accepted by all the Rishonim. Everyone holds that Keli Shamlat Ol Isra L'Tzorech Makomo, that I move, I'm allowed to put it wherever I want. Shulchan Aruch extends it to Tzorech Gufo also. We equate the two, but it seems to be accepted. Well, what about the other case, though? Let's say I didn't really have permission to pick up my hammer. Let's say, like I used to do this as a kid. I would pick up muktzah, and they'd say, well, what are you doing with the muktzah? And so I say, well, it's in my hand already, so now I can use it. Right? That was my chiddush. I was extending the day. Not only was I, because I knew something, like 9 or 10 years old, so I'm like, well, once I'm holding the pencil, I could write, no? That was my longest. So that doesn't work like that, no?
It gets shot down
clearly. But you're allowed to move the pencil wherever you want if you pick it up with Sarkufa Makomo. What about if I pick up a pencil just by accident? Am I allowed to put it in the pencil drawer after? So the Mishnah Berurah discusses this. Right? He writes, Zifkat Nyo Gimel, Dekevan Shubi Yadosh and Notlo Tzarkufa Makoma, Veshaila Tautala Yolter. Then I can move it wherever I want. Because of Hamagan Avram, Tehu Hadinim Shachach Venotla Biyado, Veshaila Tautala Yoser, Afshan Natila Hayashalola Tzarkufa Gufa Umakomo. In other words, if I pick it up by accident, the Mishnah Berurah says I could still put it down wherever I want. Va'ayim Bachronim, Then the Mishnah Berurah quotes, and he says something to the effect of, well, you know what? The Achronim quote that this only applies if I pick up a hammer, I pick up a pencil. But if I pick up a rock, or I pick up money, so then I have to drop the money right away, no? I can't put the money wherever it belongs. But if I pick up a hammer, even if I pick it up by accident, I could put it back where it belongs. But I pick up money by accident, I have to drop it right away. That's the conclusion of the Achronim. It applies to muksa that is kelim shamatola iser, we have this kula, but by muksa machmaskufo, by money or by racks, you have to drop it right away. The question of whether it applies to this middle category of muksa that we explained last week, the category of muktza called muksa machmas chisron kis, is a discussion in Hochos Mila. The mohel has something called a nizemo shomila, which is the mila knife. The mila knife is probably muksa machmas chisron kis, because the mohel doesn't want it to chip. And he's allowed to hold the knife to do the mila, because if you could do mila on Shabbos, you could hold the knife to do mila on Shabbos. Right? But after the mila is done, what does he do with the knife? There's a whole discussion. The Ramah writes in Yoredeya Reish Samach Vav that once you're holding it, you're allowed to keep on holding it. Others say, well, you know, not so simple, and you shouldn't put it down. And if you need to put it down, make sure you don't really put it down. Make sure you hand it to your friend, and he's holding the knife. And if you need,
you pass it around all Shabbos?
Yeah, you could keep on passing it around, but once you put it down, it has to stay there. That's what some of the Achronim assume. There's a whole discussion about this. This question in part, and we assume it's mutter, I think every mohel in the world. This is one of the things I used to do. I used to go to Brisson on the Shabbos, like watch what the mohel does with the mila knife after. Every mohel in the world will move the knife after the mila, will put it away, because once he was holding it, they assume that you could put it back. Even if you put it down, they put it back after. And from here, many Achronim derive that not only does this principle apply to the principle that I could put it back applies to Kele Shomatol Eser, applies to Muksa Machmas Chisaron Kis also. And not only does it apply to Muksa Machmas Chisaron Kis also, but whenever I'm holding an item and I'm trying to put it back, and then it falls down, if I put it down on the ground, I could still pick it back up and put it back until it gets to its place. That's the halacha that Achronim derive from the Mila knife. But it does not apply to rocks and to money.
Moon, that's also a danger to leave it lying around.
Right, so it could be it's dangerous. So let's say it's not dangerous. Let's say you have a place on the side, and it's there. And you can construct such a situation.
I got a question. What if you have something in your pocket, and you don't know what's in your pocket? And then you walk into an area that doesn't have an arrow.
Walk into an area that doesn't have an arrow.
And you don't know that it's in your pocket, and then you realize, and then you put your hand in there, and you see that it's in your pocket.
Yeah, so if you're in an area without an Eruv, that's not within the realm of Muktzah, that's within the realm of carrying. Mm-hmm. Generally, if I'm in a place without an Eruv, the best thing to do is to find a fire hydrant and to put it on top of a fire hydrant. Keep on walking, right, until you find a fire hydrant, and then you put it down.
Why a fire hydrant?
Because a fire hydrant is an area that's not considered a Rishus HaYachid on the level... But it's a makom patur. To be a rishus hayachid, it has to be four tefachim by four tefachim. A fire hydrant is too small, so you should put it. I once did this. I was once carrying a tissue outside, whatever, and you keep on walking, you find a fire hydrant. Then the best thing to do is to kind of flip it out backhandedly from your pocket. That's a different shirt to give on a different occasion. Now, if the item that you're carrying is muktzah, so then what happens there? For example, the Ramah talks, real muktzah, we said you have to drop right away. Let's say I realize, Misha Shachach here, let's look at the third source, Misha Shachach Kiso Alav B'Shabbos. Let's say I have my wallet on me, and it's Shabbos. I forget that my wallet is with me on Shabbos, so what do I do? So Ramah says, if I'm at home, I can keep on walking. Now this principle seems to go against what we've been saying until now, because my wallet probably has money in it, and money... is muksa machmas gufo. If it has money in it, I have to drop it right away. I shouldn't keep on walking, right? So the Mishnah Berurah here kind of touches this din up in the Bir Halacha. Right? He writes that we're talking about a wallet that doesn't have any money in it. No, etc. In other words, that we're talking about a case really that. It's not the higher level of muktzah. That's the way the Mishnah Berurah doctors this case up. Okay. Be it as it may, the halacha is, for muktzah machmas gufo, you have to drop it right away. The wallet case maybe is a little different, and we'll try to explain why in 5 minutes. Now, what's the rationale for this? Why is it that if I'm carrying muktzah, right, even if I pick it up by accident, I'm allowed to put it down wherever I want? Why is that? So the Ur Sameach has an interesting comment, and I think this Ur Sameach can help us understand the distinction between rocks and a hammer. So let's do the Ur Sameach. The Ur Sameach says as follows. He quotes, last week, if you remember, we mentioned that the different reasons given for the Isser of Muktzah. One reason given by the Ravid, the Hasagos, Hevi Tam HaGemara, the Hevi Mishum, Gezer the Hotza'ah, right? That the Ravid quotes that the reason for Muktzah is because I shouldn't carry. Right? That at the time of Nehemiah, people were very lenient, they were abusing the prohibition of carrying on Shabbos, so therefore Chazal instituted an Isser Muktzah. So he writes, Ulafi Zeh, in the second line, Asi Shapir, Mashi Hikilu Chachamim. He says, therefore I understand why once I'm carrying it, I can put it down wherever I want. What's the rationale? You see, the Ur Sameach says like this. There's a halacha by carrying that in order to really violate the prohibition of carrying, I need an akira and a hanacha. I have to pick the item up and put it down. Right? That's to violate the prohibition of carrying. And the Gemara tells us at the beginning of Shabbos, I have to pick the item up with intention of putting the item down after. If I pick the item up, if akira rishona lo heisol etzorech, I pick the item up by accident. No? So then I can't possibly violate the iser of carrying on the doraisa level. Consequently, says the Ur Sameach, we can understand why if I pick up a hammer, by accident, I'm allowed to put it down wherever I want. Why? Because the entire prohibition of muktzah is modeled after carrying. In a situation I can't possibly violate the prohibition of carrying because I picked it up without intention. So then, there can't be an iser muktzah. This is the tremendous chiddush of the Ars Hameach, that he connects what we discussed last week to what we're talking about today. That the reason why it's permitted is because I picked it up without intention. Now, if you remember, last week I mentioned in passing a quick question, no? When was the Isser of Muksa instituted? So the Gemara says at the time of Nehemiah, no? But we also had another Gemara, that when David HaMelech died, they're nervous, what do you do with him? Right? And David HaMelech, right, the historians realize, was before Nehemiah, right? So when David HaMelech died, they're worried, what do we do with him? Ayetz Muksa. So this was a question that we asked last week. So you suggested, David, right? That maybe there are two different types of Muksa. Right? Possible. I think it's on tape, so we can find out. But you suggest that there are two different types of mukta. That maybe originally there was a prohibition of mukta on sticks and stones, items that are not kalim, dead bodies, right? Then there's mukta. That existed at the time of David HaMelech. In the time of Nehemiah, they were worried that the people are violating Shabbos and they're carrying, so then they instituted the mukta on kalim. So if that's the case, I would suggest as follows, that based on this Ars Hameach, we could understand how come we only allow you to put the hammer down wherever you want, once you're holding it, but not a stick or a stone. Because the hammer is based on carrying. The hammer is part of the Gezeiros of Nehemiah. Right? If it's modeled after carrying, so then I could put it down wherever I want. Because once I picked it up, without intention to carry, it's mutter. But the sticks and the stones, that was an earlier type of mukta, so then the entire prohibition is not based on carrying, and we don't have this leniency that once I'm holding it, I can put it down wherever I want. And therefore, the sticks and the stones and the money I have to drop right away. That's what I would suggest according to this Ars Hameach. If it's not based on carrying, what's it based on? So Chazal felt that certain items should not be moved on Shabbos because maybe the Rambam's reasons are correct. Right? The reasons that, you know, we don't want to disturb your Shabbos. Or Chazal felt certain items should remain rooted. It's unclear. There's no real Gemara. But we do know that there are prohibitions of Muksa that existed before Nehemiah that are not based on carrying. That's correct. I think that's true also. But I'm not convinced that that's true. Last week I was talking about a different thing. I'm talking about those things that are based on carrying, but are more severe iser. I was talking about muksa, machmas chisron kisa. The Prima Gadim says there's no het of total menatzad. That's because those items are not designated for Shabbos use. They're withdrawn from Shabbos use. That's what we were saying last week. No, we don't say that. That's Beferish in the Gemara, that there is a Heter. Why that's true, we'll try to explain, but not tonight. Because I'm running out of time. Okay. Okay. So let's just continue. Other categories of moving Mukta. Other Heterim to move Mukta. There's a Heter called Totum and Hatzad that we were talking about, no? Totum and Hatzad basically means that I'm not moving the mukta item directly. I'm using a non-mukta item to move the mukta item. The case in the Gemara is if I have a radish, no? And the radish is inside straw. The straw is mukta. The radish isn't. If I move the radish, all the straw is also going to move. I'm not moving the straw directly, so that's permitted. That's permitted. That's Totum and Hatzad. Tosis points out that Mem Gimel and Medbeis and Shabbos can go over to Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, that Tiltum and Hatzad is only permitted if it's with Tzorech Dovar HaMutter. Right? If I move a Muktza item through a non-Muktza item, well, it depends what my intention is. If my intention is to protect the Muktza, it's forbidden. But if my intention is not to protect the Muktza, my intention is for some permitted use, so then, it is going to be permitted. For example, let's say there's money on the chair, right? I have money on the chair. It's not a busis, right? Because I just forgot it there. To be a busis, you have to leave it there, has to be meniach. This isn't meniach. I didn't leave it there intentionally. I forgot the money on the chair. So, I want to take the chair with the money out of the room so I can pick it up and carry it, right? I'm not moving the money directly. I'm moving the chair, and the money gets moved with the chair. So far, so good? So it depends. Why am I moving the chair? If I want the money in a different room to protect the money so that people don't take it, that's usury. But if I want it because I don't want my guests need the space to sit and they can't sit on the money, or for whatever the other reason is, then it's permitted. Toltamin Hatzad is mutter, Letzarech Davar HaMutter, but Toltamin Hatzad is not mutter, Letzarech Davar HaAser. So far, so good. Tzarech Makoma, we assume, is a good enough reason. Another example of this is sweeping on Shabbos, no? Sweeping on Shabbos. There's dirt on the floor. It's muktzah. The junk on the floor is muktzah. How am I allowed to sweep on Shabbos, no? So the answer is that it's till now, we're assuming that the brooms are not muktzah because the brooms that we have today don't break usually when you, I think Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says that using a wicker broom is the same Shabbos whether you're allowed to comb your sheitel on Shabbos, no? Is there a question of tolesh, of pulling something out when it's not a natural attachment, no? The Bach doesn't speak about sheitels, but the Bach assumes that the reason not to use a wicker broom on Shabbos is because you'll break the branches. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says, based on that Bach, we try to accept the Bach. Based on the Bach, you shouldn't comb your sheitel on Shabbos, no? Because you'll rip, even though it's not a natural attachment, but you'll rip potentially some of the hairs out. Okay. So we have a non-wicker broom, and I'm sweeping with my non-wicker broom, which is a heter item. Through the heter item, I'm moving a muksa item. Is it permitted to sweep on Shabbos? Well, if it's a tzorach, davar hamutar, I need the room to be clean, because it would be a graf shorei. It would be disgusting. If not, it would offend my sensibilities. There's in the imus, so it's permitted. That's why the Achronim say you're allowed to sweep on Shabbos. Okay. So far, so good. That is pretty much accepted by all the Rishonim. But then they get some cases that are not as clear. The Mishnah Berurah paskens as follows. The Mishnah Berurah says, if I have my nutshells on the table, and I want to move my nutshells, which we said might be permitted based on graf shorei, but maybe the nutshells aren't a full graf shorei, there aren't that many of them, it's not fully permitted, based on the idea that it's disgusting, but you just want to move the nutshells, so what do? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes on the Taz that I could take a knife and push the nutshells away. The Chazon Ish argues. And the Chazon Ish assumes that I can't do that, no? The Chazon Ish assumes that I'm not allowed to take my knife and move the nutshells because the knife is just an extension of my hand. The Mishnah Berurah and the Chazon Ish have a fundamental disagreement about what is the reason why we permit Tiltum and Hatzad of Tzarech Davar HaMutter. The Chazon Ish assumes that's permitted because we view it like you're doing a permitted activity. But if the entire activity is only Letzarech Davar HaAser, so it's going to be Aser. Similarly, in a situation that with the knife, I'm moving the nutshells, Chazon Ish doesn't permit it. The Mishnah Berurah says no. The idea is that we permit you to move the item. If it's not direct contact with the muktzah, it's permitted. That's one point. Okay, I'm not elaborating on and going quickly because I want to get to the last point, and time is late. Another dispute between the Mishnah Berurah and the Chazon Ish is as follows. Mishnah Berurah, if you turn to the first side of the page, the underlined parts. The Ran and the Russian Shabbos have a question. There's a Mishnah about that if there's some straw on thy bed, I'm allowed to lie down on the bed. The question is, aren't I moving the muksa when I lie down on the bed? So the Ran gives one answer. He says, well, that's toto min hatzad l'tzarech davar hamutar. I'm indirectly moving the muktzah for a permitted purpose, to lie down. There's no greater heter on Shabbos than to take a nap. So therefore, the Ran says it's permitted. The Rush says that it's permitted because this case is called tilto begufo. And tilto begufo, moving stuff with my body, is even better than tilto menatzar. That's what the Rush assumes. The Rush says that tilto menatzar means I have a heter item that I use to move a mutter item. But if I don't have a heter item that I use to move the mutter item, if I move it with my body, that is even better than tiltol min hatzad. And according to the Rush, even if it's mitzarech davar ha'aser, even if I'm moving the straw because I want to save the straw for later, it's going to be permitted because I'm moving it with my body.
Use your foot, your elbow.
So the Mishnah Berurah therefore paskins like the Rush. Isa b'simin shin yud aleph the total muksa begufo. Afilu mitzarech davar ha'muksa is mutter. Dezel ol nikra total klal. There's money on the ground, any muktz item on the ground, according to the Mishnah Berurah, I could kick it all day long. No? Total begufo, moving it with my body, is perfectly permitted, even to protect the muktza. That's what the Mishnah Berurah assumes. The Chazon Ish argues on the Mishnah Berurah. It's interesting, Reb Osher Weiss points out in his Sefer that the machlokas in the Mishnah Berurah and the Chazon Ish seems to parallel the machlokas in the Rush and the Ran. For a different time, but the Chazon Ish points out that it's forbidden to kick muktzah. I'm not allowed to just kick my muktzah all day. Because I'm doing it for the muktzah, the Chazon Ish says that's just like moving it with a stick, with a heter item, you can't do it for the muktzah. That's what the Chazon Ish assumes. Reb Moshe Feinstein, in the Tshuvos in the back of this muktzah book, which are reprinted in Chelak K of Igros Moshe, Reb Moshe writes that you should follow the Chazon Ish and you should not kick muktzah. Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, however, says that he thinks kicking muktzah is permitted. No?
Kicking muktzah
for the sake of the muktzah. In other words, I have money on the floor. I think last Friday night someone came over to me in Shul that she found some money in her pocket. What should she do? Okay, common case. So what do you do? So the first thing is, we assume that you didn't leave the money there on purpose. It wasn't meniach, it was just shachach, so it's not a bosses. So what you could do is you could shake it out. No? You try to move the inside of your pocket, you shake it out, you have the money fall. But then you're going to lose the money. So I said, so you kick the money over. Kick the money to a corner of the courtroom. I'm not going to tell you which corner I told her to put it in, because then you'd know the trick. Right? And you kick the money to the corner of the courtroom. I said, it's perfectly mutter. That's what the Mishnah Paskins. The Chazon Ish would say, that's usher. Because according to Chazon Ish, I'm kicking the muktzah to protect the muktzah. I'm not allowed to do that. Reb Shlomo Zalman feels that we should pass like the Mishnah Berurah against the Chazon Ish. And he writes, this is in Simen Yud Dalet of the Mincha Shlomo, and it's also in the back of, in Shemirah Shabbos 2.0, Volume 1, in the back, Reb Shlomo Zalman has one tshuva, right? The Shemirah Shabbos 1.0, which was where they had all the kulas, that one you can't get anymore. Shemirah Shabbos 2.0 is the standard one, and now there's the new Shemirah Shabbos 3.0, that has a new numbering system that's going to complicate everything. But in Shemirah Shabbos 2.0, in the back of Volume 1, there's a tshuva from Shlomo Zalman to argue that we paskin like the Mishnah Berurah, not like the Chazon Ish, and I'm allowed to kick muktzah. And his rationale is, since the prohibition of muktzah is based on carrying, so in the situation that I wouldn't be liable for carrying, because it's not the normal way that you carry something, so therefore there's no problem, muktzah. So he says, kicking the stone, right, that is going to be heter gamor, because that's not a way that you can be chayav for carrying. Based on the analysis that we gave before, I think there's room to question Reb Shlomo Zalman, no? I think there's room to question Reb Shlomo Zalman. And I'll tell you why. Because we said before, because it wouldn't apply, right? This idea that the rules of muktzah are modeled after carrying is only true by kalim, but it's not true by sticks and stones. That's what we proved from David HaMelech, right? So if that's the case, it wouldn't help. But even so, I think I was right when I told the young woman last week that she's allowed to kick the muktzah. Because Reb Moshe, who argues on Reb Shlomo Zalman, Reb Moshe says that you follow the Chazon Ish and you shouldn't kick the muktzah. Reb Moshe says, b'mokom hefzeh, you're allowed to kick muktzah for the sake of the muktzah. So if you want to kick the money, to save the money, to protect the money, if there's a hefzeh involved, so then Reb Moshe would also okay kicking the muktzah. It would be fine. Yeah.
Two questions. If Reb Moshe is going with the Chazon Ish, who says you shouldn't protect muktzah, then didn't Reb Moshe just say
Reb Moshe says I go like the Chazon Ish that I'm not allowed to kick muktzah for the sake of muktzah,
right.
But Reb Moshe himself writes that b'makom hefzed, if there's loss involved, then you could follow the Mishnah Berurah.
Okay, my second question is, how does the Chazon Ish solve the problem then?
How does he solve the problem of the rush?
Because if you're not allowed to kick it, and you have it in your, or if you're not allowed to kick, or you have it in your pocket.
Right, so what I would do is I knock it out of my pocket, then I'm not allowed to kick it. I am allowed to ask a guy to move it for me.
Okay.
Right? I could do something like that, but I can't kick the muktzah to protect the muktzah, according to the Chazon Ish, right? That's correct. Now.
What's the shear guessing?
Subjective.
Then how is there ever a moving something for the sake of the most object that's not the normal hefsid?
What do you mean? There's a rock or something. As a kid, I used to kick rocks all the time.
It's not for the sake of the rock. That's because I enjoy kicking the rocks.
It certainly is not for any mutter sake, no.
Having fun kicking rocks isn't the one that hurts.
But the rock is mutter. I don't know. I don't think so. Now, just to go back to the case I mentioned before, let's say there's a wallet in my pocket, no? On Shabbos. So we spoke about walking with the wallet. The Rama permits it, and we weren't exactly sure how this fits into our rules. So the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the Alter Rebbe, wants to say that the wallet in my pocket is really toto begufo. I'm not moving the wallet with my hands. I'm moving it with my body, and therefore it's permitted. This is very questionable. Very questionable, because usually the principle of toto begufo applies if I move it with my body in an atypical sort of way. There's a case in Shulchan Aruch like this. Let's say I have a shoelace that's ripped on my shoe on Shabbos. And the shoelace is technically muktzah, no? So that's considered an isser of moving the muktzah when I walk. Why? Right? I'm moving it with my foot. The answer is because that's the normal way you move a shoelace, no? With your foot. So the normal way I move my wallet is also the wallet is in my pocket. That's the normal way to move a wallet. So it's questionable. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav apparently assumes that the heter of tilto begufo applies even if it's the normal way to move something. Most of the later svarim assume that you can't rely on this. And the heter of tilto begufo on the rush, if you read that rush, it's Perek Gimel of Shabbos Simen Yutes, the rush is clear that the heter of tilto begufo is only if it's shelo kedarko, only if I'm moving it in an atypical sort of way. But if it's a normal way to move it, so then the heter wouldn't apply. So, basically, what we discussed tonight are some of the kulas of moving muktzah. If the muktzah offends my sensibilities, if the muktzah can damage me, if I am holding the muktzah already, it's allowed to move. The Ors HaMeach gives a rationale. The Ors HaMeach's rationale may help for the distinction between kalim and stones, a stone they have to trap right away. If that's the case, though, we didn't understand Reb Shlomo Zalman, where he gave the kula like the Mishnah Berurah, not like the Chasan Ish. I'm allowed to kick rocks for the sake of the rock. Right, we didn't understand that Reb Shlomo Zalman, but it would still be permitted, right, if there's hefsin involved. Right, that's what Reb Moshe assumes. Yeah.
So, just to be clear, according to the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, in the case of the money falling out, you can take it out of your pocket. You can pick it up with your hand and put it away, because that would be doing it in a normal way, right?
No. Tilto biyadayim is really muktzah. That you can't do. Tilto begufo I can do even if it's normal. In other words, I can use a body part, right? The isser of muktzah is with my hands. Anything besides my hands, according to Shulchan Aruch HaRav, carrying stuff on my head, even if you live in a country that it's normal to carry stuff on your head, right? Shulchan Aruch HaRav would say that's not a problem of moving muktzah. So to move the wallet in my... Once I had it in my pocket at the beginning of Shabbos, Shulchan Aruch HaRav would say I can continue walking with it, because that's tilto begufo. Once it's out and I have to pick it up with my hand, that's forbidden. Because
okay.
My hand is real muktzah. Fine. Again, there are other mutter scenarios of moving muktzah. It's not as common. Blowing muktzah is permitted, these types of things. But maybe that's for a different occasion. Now, we could spend many, many weeks on muktzah, but my guess is that people will probably get bored. Also, next week I'm going to be away, so there's no shir next week. So 2 weeks from now, when we return, I thought maybe we should discuss Pekuach Nefesh on Shabbos.
Ooh, that's
good. Yeah. So, we'll talk about Pekuach Nefesh, and then maybe we'll do Amira L'Nachri after Pekuach Nefesh, because the topics are related. Thank you very much for coming.
Great.